that are people happy.
All right. I'm stuck with, I don't know why I bothered with the remote since I'm stuck at the microphone now. On the handout I sent round, where are we? Come back to that in a minute. There are a couple of things. I'll just mention them briefly. I don't want to go over them. One was a sheet that looks like that, that gives the scaling points. It's a bit small up there, but you've got it in front of you. It tells you how many marks out of a 90 or 180, hang on, what's it out of? How many marks out of, out of 180 you needed to get different grades year by year. Anyone can look it up. It's on the VCAA website, so it's no great secret. Last year's might not be up yet, but it goes up each year, and you can get that sort of information there. So that's for your information. I can get rid of that now. Sorry, taking time here. The other one was some general marking principles. This sheet gets handed out to assessors just to give them some general guidance, particularly for the new assessors. It's handed out to them to give them some general guidance about marks paid for, what they're not paid for. It's sort of been developed over a period of years, general procedures we usually operate on. So I think it's perhaps particularly for newer teachers. The old hands probably know this stuff already anyway, but that's on the sheet you were handed out there before. A few little changes to things with online marking and stuff, so I won't bother going through those now. If anybody has any particular questions about it, you're welcome to ask me at the end of the session. And where is the... eyesight's terrible as you get older. Come on. That's better. All right. Is it going to worry people if I move around, am I loud enough from the back, or should I speak? Some general comments. Just a reminder, I'll zip through these fairly quickly. First thing, because some of them are similar to what I've mentioned previous years, don't always rely on the textbook as the sole arbiter of what's on the course. Make sure you look at the study design. For newer people, the examiner's report goes up on the VCAA website. I understand it's not up for last November's exam yet. The June one is certainly up. You can get lots of good reports that show you how your class went compared to the rest of the state on each question and things like that from your VAS coordinator at school. We're always looking for new people to mark exams. This is the ad for a start off. Usually, we have a turnover of a few people, not many. There are many people do it for a number of years, and it's excellent PD. If you're looking for VIT registration again, this marking exams counts as your external PD. You can add up hours there, and it really is excellent PD for people. You can go on the VCAA website, and there's a tab at the top called Employment, and if you go into there, there's casual employment or something or other it's called, you can register for marking of exams. And if you've had a number of years experience teaching the subject, they're the sorts of people we're looking for to appoint as new assessors each year. Online marking, last year for the first time, physics, chemistry and agricultural science, I think, what are you chuckling about? Were marked online. So there are a number of things students need to be careful of with that. The exam booklet is a bit bigger than the standard A3 size. It's got borders down the middle, or borders all around the pages, I think, but particularly in the middle, where the students are not allowed to write. So I'd really be careful about making sure students stay within the page borders when they're doing their writing, because what happens to the exam papers, they go to the place, a guillotine goes chop, and chops off the staples, and the first little bit first centimetre or so of the middle, and then it's fed through the scanner, zip, zip, zip. So anything written in the borders that's been chopped off isn't going to get looked at. Other things about online marking, directions came out to schools about ensuring that students wrote in black or blue biro. Now, pencil seemed to be okay. There didn't seem to be any trouble with pencil, so long as it was a decent pencil and not really faint. But I'm not saying pencil, because that wasn't stated. Any students who wrote in red, green, purple, it just doesn't scan. It won't appear on the page. It won't be assessed. Occasionally, the assessor looking at it thinks, I reckon there's probably something else here that I'm not seeing, and it gets sent through to, for the paper to be pulled out and rescanned in colour, or to be brought to us to have a look at separately. But you can't rely on that. So really encourage your students to stick to the directions. Write in blue or black pen. It may change to pencil this year as well. The only difficulty with pencil is if they write with a hard pencil and then rub it out and rewrite things, the hard pencil tends to scan as well, even though it's been rubbed out. So there are some problems with that. But the online marking procedure really works very well. It makes sure that every paper is double marked, which we were already doing. But in the past, if when the two assessors had marked the paper separately and the marks were different, you know, the overall mark for paper, the paper was, the two assessors gave it maybe three marks different for the whole paper, that was triple checked. Now, each item, maybe each question even. So each question is double marked, and if the two marks for that question differ, then it's checked by a third one automatically. So every question is could be triple checked if necessary. So it makes for very, very reliable marking. What else have we got to say? Reminders. A few of the standard sorts of things to remember, remind students, writing legibly. If in answering a question they try it method A, then method B, then method C, and you do see this, it's not any, meeny, miny, or take, please look at them all and pick the one that's closest to correct. You don't get marks for that. They have to cross out the ones they don't want looked at. And sometimes with multiple attempts or questions that have got a number of steps to them, you've got to work out this before you can work out that, before you can work out the final thing, really encourage them to get some order into it. You know, that's all over the page. There's bits everywhere. It becomes very hard to award marks for that sort of thing.
Can I just ask if someone does do three different attempts, what the assessor does with that?
Is it
zero, or do they just take the first one?
Normally it's zero. Yeah, you can't have multiple tries at the same thing. Now, although that's the general principle, there may be a particular question on a particular year that we say, there's something different or odd about, and we'll come up with a special, have a special discussion and decide on that one in particular. But the general principle is that. Mentioned that already. Explanations must address the question. We, particularly last year, we did have a number of questions where students use the scattergun approach. You write down everything that you've got on your cheat sheet on that topic, and hopefully some of those dot points are relevant. Those sort of things did not get full marks. Often students, they'd say one thing, but later on in what they were saying, it was sort of contradictory. Well, that means you don't get the mark above. Well, you can't get mark for saying A equals B and then saying A doesn't equal B. So you can't get marks for that sort of thing. So they need to be a little bit more discriminating in what they're writing sometimes. The scattergun approach is not really working anymore. What else have we got? Explanation questions are usually one mark per dot point. Very importantly, you may have noticed on last year's exam, almost every question said, you must show your working. If you don't show your working, you will not get full marks. The best you can do is one mark, if the answer's right. And it's just good to encourage the students that to show the working, because even if the answer's wrong, we will go back and look at what we can give them marks for. Occasionally there's a little bit of excessive rounding off, particularly if you're going through a couple of stages of a question, they're rounding off here and rounding off there and rounding off, and the answer winds up being miles from where we'd expect. Keep a few figures going all the way through, round off at the end. We're still seeing students unable to use calculators. I really would encourage teachers to make sure that their students are using the scientific calculator that they're going to use in the exam right through the year. It's no good using even one scientific calculator and then grabbing another one on the day of the exam. Buttons are in different places, things work slightly differently. We often see students unable to use their calculators. Simplify your answers. Powers of 10 calculations, troubles with calculators, don't know. Often, you know, if you've got a 3 by 10 to the 7 divided by 6 by 10 to the 4, they don't use the exponent button, the times 10 to the button, and they forget to put brackets around the bottom line, so the 6.3 gets separated from the times 10 to the negative 4 and gets stupid answers, so they need to be careful. Transforming equations and formulas has been a bit of a problem the last few years, you know, F equals MA, so A equals F times M and things like this. Right, June exam. Got to keep moving. This PowerPoint may already be on the Vic Physics site if you want to go into it and have a look at some of the stuff for later. So some general information, about 7,000 students. Numbers have gone up over the last couple of years. In 2004 we had 7,700 and then it dropped. We were down to about just over 6,000, 6,000 a couple hundred. We've crept up to closer to 7,000 again. Mean mark, 62%, quite a reasonable one for that. The median 65, standard deviation 22. You can get this information off the website. For six students only achieved 100%. Much better. The previous year, some of you may remember, was perhaps a bit easy. This exam was, we think, around about the standard we want. That's the percentage of students doing the different detailed studies. 14% for, what's A, relativity? 73% for structures and 12% for further electronics. It's the percentage of students doing the different ones. They're the grades and the marks you're required to get the various grades. They're on the handout sheets, so there's probably no need to copy those down. You see, about 90% for an A-plus is what we're looking for. About 80% or thereabout for an A, so it's not bad. It was a good standard as far as spreading the students like that's concerned. Now, some of the things that students did poorly. I should have had a copy of the mark scheme in front of me so I knew what on earth they were doing on these things. This question, we had all sorts of confusion. The acceleration, while students, where's the pointer options? While students got the force right, so about, 1 newton, but then they applied that force to only that object, and some applied it to that object instead of the both objects combined. The force of 1 newton is acting on both of them. That was one of the big, there was a big problem that year. What's the kinetic energy of block M1? I'm just trying to think what the problem was there. Obviously they would have got the wrong acceleration from the previous question, but we would have followed that through. I think once again they were using, might have used the wrong mass or something. Can't quite remember what happened with that one. You'll have to read the examiner's report on the VCAA website to work out what it was. Although I could bring it up here, I suppose, and have a look. But certainly that one was just looking at the wrong mass. This one, circular motion question. That one? I It's a bit different to, this is just my assessment of it. The question's a little different. We haven't had one hanging over the edge for some years now. People will cover it. It's not one that's come up for the last few years, so obviously it's going to be a little bit different. However, the exam panel would always be trying to put things on that, something, not the whole exam, but just the odd question that's a little bit different. You don't want everything to be the same as last year and the year before. You want a little bit of variety. And it probably varies a little bit as the exam panel changes too. It was ever setting the questions, different group of people last year, or a largely different group of people last year, so some were the same, so maybe that caused some of the variety. What have we got here? The circular motion questions. The value of the, oh, yes. Drawing the forces, for a start off, oh, I forgot question five, yes. Drawing the forces acting on the cyclist, is that forces acting on the cyclist? Yeah. We had people drawing the net force. Instead of just drawing the gravity force, and the reaction force up that way, we had them also drawing the net force. That's not one of the forces, the separate forces acting on them, that's just the result of all the others. So that was the common thing going on there. Apart from that, we didn't have that one. We had ones up here. A variety. We didn't get picky about that, no. As a general rule, we would like the starting point of the force to be the point of action. So we'd like the normal reaction one to start here. We'd like the gravity, the force of the Earth on the bicycle to start there. The next one, to work out the angle of the slope, this question is different to what we've had before because the course changed a bit in 2009 it changed a little bit. There was a bit more added to circular motion, and this specific sort of thing was on the course, so it's been asked now. Some students had a little rote formula for it, and that worked out. Theta equals the inverse something or other of something or other. They had that on their cheat sheet, and that's fine. They were able to work out what the angle would be. Others tried to do the full analysis of the thing, and some managed to get through it. A lot, most, mucked up somewhere. And the muck-up tended to be trying to get components of forces. Or some of them were because the force in here they had as an extra force. They had, there was the normal reaction force, that was part of it, plus there was also mv squared and r acting, and there was a general confusion about what's a resultant force and what are the actual real forces acting. So that was pretty ordinary, that one. There was something else. Sorry, I just don't know whether it was on that question. Oh, never mind. If it doesn't come up. Oh. One of the questions, I don't know whether it's going to come up here or not, the answer turned out to be 10 for something. I can't remember which question it was now. I thought it might have been the circular motion one or something, but I can't remember. The answer turned out for one of the questions to be 10. After doing a whole lot of stuff. However, some students just wrote, gravity's 10, so put 10 in the box. Had absolutely nothing to do with the question, but they got the right answer, and were getting some marks for it. There were a couple, two or three questions in the mechanics section of this paper that were like that. That's the reason, part of the reason, that students are being told they have to show working. We don't want to be giving full marks for garbage. We want to be able to say, this is rubbish here, no understanding whatsoever. Just because they've put the right number in the box, we're not going to give them marks for rubbish. That question may still come up. I can't remember what it was now. Speed of the helicopter hitting the ground. Students still have trouble dealing with the two components to get the resultant speed at which it hits the ground. That's projectile questions, the simplistic ones, they're fine. But every year, there's been a, well, for some years now, there's been a projectile question that required a little bit more depth of understanding, a little bit more complicated. And that's where the rot sets in. So the slightly more difficult projectile questions are causing problems. Yes?
Just a quick question. On the sheet it says accept G 9.8 or 10.
Yep.
Why would they have used 9.8 to accept D1?
On the front of the exam it says take it as 10.
Okay, all right.
However, some students still use 9.8. And we're certainly not going to penalise that sort of thing, no. But encourage them to use 10 because the assessors are looking for answers that involve 10. Maybe someone might miss it, although hopefully with two people checking every paper, at least it won't be missed. Energy questions. Oh, this wasn't even an energy question, the first part anyway. What have we done? All right, you've got a spring, put a 2 kilogram mass on it and gently lower it until it stopped, stationary. The mass is extended by 0.4 metres. What's the spring constant? Well, at that point, the gravity force down is equal to the kx mg. Sorry, my writing's not too good at angles with things that move around. It was just a basic matter of using that. I'm just trying to work out why it was such a difficult thing to do. Oh, yes. That's right. Potential energy lost, MGH, is going to equal the energy stored in the spring, half kx squared. Well, no, it's not, because some of the energy, potential energy lost has gone into the person's hand. They've done work against it on the way down. That's something that's come up regularly over the years. I've got to move faster. What's the difference in magnitude of the total energy of the spring mass system, figure A and figure B? Ah, righto. So it was a matter of working out difference in magnitude. Oh, yeah. Potential energy in the initial situation, MGH. Gravitational potential energy, spring potential energy when it stretched to 0.4, and subtract the two figures. And they actually had to work out both and do the subtraction. I think that was one of the questions where you could not work out both, you could fluke an answer. You can fluke the right answer on that one, didn't like that. These ones with springs, energy conversions in springs and that sort of stuff, regularly cause problems. And this was another one. What's that? The truth? Yeah, right. Separate. And we had to select which graph corresponded to the situation for a number of different cases. Once again, total energy of the system stays the same all the way. No, sorry, not the total energy. Read the question, you idiot. The total kinetic energy. Well, as they're moving, there's a certain amount of kinetic energy. When they come together and compress, some of the kinetic energy has gone into spring potential energy, and by the time they separate out again, you've got the energy back, kinetic energy back. So you're looking at A. I think it was an elastic collision on the previous page. But collision's elastic, so you get all the kinetic energy back. Momentum. Not me, is it? Total momentum. Then we go to B. Momentum's the same before, during, after. What one gets, the other loses. And this block altogether, again, a slightly different question. Certainly the sort of thing that had been in, not the last couple of years, but prior to that, you'd have had these sorts of questions. But a slightly different mix of questions. And this was just, yes. When we're using, students are using gravity, universal gravitation, GMM on R squared or whatever it is, and formulas that for the period of things going orbiting the Earth or orbiting the Earth in this case. Couple of points. One, if they write down the wrong formula, just copy it down incorrectly off the formula sheet, that's a fairly serious problem if they can't even copy it down properly. We're not going to follow through errors after that. So they're not going to get marks there. If they copy the formulas down correctly, and the standard sort of thing is to go F equals GMM on R squared, put in all the numbers, and just forget to square the thing. They have it written down. The square is written there, but they always forget to square when they do it in the calculation. Well, we're going to give them some marks, not getting full marks, but we're going to give them some marks for that sort of thing. It's just we think that's just a little slip. It's actually written there, but if it's not even written there, don't expect any marks. This one, what is the mass of your? I think it's the second, the 19, where they have to get the period, the time to go around. They use the wrong mass. They use the mass of the orbiting thing instead of the mass of the Earth at the middle in the formula. So confusion over what the symbols in the formula actually mean. That's a common thing that happens there. Then we get on to electric... what's this topic called? Electronics and photonics. And the electronics and photonics, and also electric power later in the year, students continue to have trouble working out what goes on in series circuits and what goes on in parallel circuits, where the current stays the same, where the voltage stays the same, this sort of thing. It's constant. So in this question, what current will flow through the ammeter? This is question two. Question one was okay. So we've got our... we've changed the circuit. So we're dealing with this circuit now. We've still got the same characteristics for the diode. What current? So we had all sorts of things going on here. It just couldn't make head or tail what they were writing at times. They didn't realise that the 200 and the diode had the same voltage. Some of them added the 500 and the 200 resistors together as a series thing and used that to work out a current, and then they just disregarded the diode altogether. It's just basic series and parallel circuits were a complete mess. Not a complete mess, but for some students it's a mess. I'm just picking out the bad things. There were some good things on the paper that students had really stepped up since the previous year. And this was another one where it was just the series and parallel thing. Some were didn't realise that these two things were in parallel. Others knew they were in parallel but said 2 plus 2 is 4 anyway. Some did the 0.5 and the 2 and then added on the other 2 as a parallel thing later. It just was all over the place. It's simple series and parallel. I don't want to go through every bit of these. What have we got here? We've got some lights going to come on in the garden at sunset. We've got a little LDR, and that's the characteristics of it. And what's the question asked about? And we set it up in a little circuit so that the LDR is here and the switching circuit, if some voltage, the switching circuit turns on when Vout is 4 volts. There's been a question like this on every year for the last umpteen years. It's always just about the last question. Well, in the past, it's been just about the last question on the section of the exam. And being able to use a simple little voltage divider circuit to work out the voltage Vout, most are generally able to do that. But when it starts asking students to explain what happens if, or how do we get this to do that, then their explanations really fall down. Oh, some get it fine. You know, the good ones will get it fine. There's no problem. But they really need to clarify in their mind what they're writing. And I don't know whether they do that initially, perhaps under the pressure of the exam. They just start writing and writing and writing and writing, and it's all over the place. They don't need to write long-winded, complicated sentences. We're happy with just little dot points, short sentences, be concise. You don't need an essay on the subject. So that's a standard sort of question that always causes some difficulties. Does this go up? Does that go down? What, as it gets darker, does the resistance go... So you've got to keep flipping back to here. As it gets darker, the resistance goes up, so it uses more voltage, so it, yeah, all this sort of thing. Then we had, yeah, here was a little voltage amplifier thing, which was, you'd have to go back a few years, not that many, half a dozen years probably, to get a question that was like this in the past, I think. The voltage gain during in the linear phase. Obviously, this the Vout, the thing's not operating linearly here. In these sections, here and here and here and here, that these bits, whoops, sorry, it's all operating linearly. So you need to look at those sections. And what do we put in? So that this is up to 5 here. Oh, I got a pointer, haven't I? I forgot about that. Where is it? Can't find it. Wouldn't teach me to use it. Whoa. Ah, that's the switch. That's the... Where's the... Oh, there we go, I think. Now, yeah, up to about this stage here, 5 milliseconds or whatever it is, we're about there. So you're putting 200 millivolts in and you're getting negative 10 volts out. So just divide the negative 10 by the 200 millivolts to get the amplification. We had students actually continuing on this part here, drawing that on the graph, and then using the full height over this to get the amplification. It was quite a common one. So that question was a little bit different to usual. And then you had to actually draw the characteristics. So once again, a slightly different sort of question, but we've got the... Where is it? There we go. Up to... Hang on, where's the... I need this part here. Voltage in, voltage out. Okay. All right, so 0 volts in, 0 volts out. It's easy. And there's pick a couple of points. Of course, once you get to these sections there, the graph's going to flatten out. Oh, no, sorry, the gain of the amp, you didn't need the negative. For amplification, you don't need the negative. It's just, this is 10 times as big as that, whether it's upside down, don't care. So yeah, no, you don't need the negative. I don't go through all the detailed studies. I'll just put them all up at once. Relativity had, this time, had the lowest mean score, 53% was the mean on that section. Materials 78%, further electronics 64%. Year by year it changes. Last year it may have been relativity had the highest mean score. I can't remember, but they do. I know they change positions virtually every year, and so whether that actually means the relativity was a harder section of the paper than the others, or in this that year, or whether it means the students doing relativity weren't quite as good as the students doing further electronics last year, I don't know. But they were the... So I've written down the questions that were done poorly on each section. If you want to come up and have a look at this later, or you can get it off the website, Vic Physics website as well. No, there is no, the same as further maths and any other subject that has what we call them detailed studies, they call them options or modules and things like that. There's no inter-module statistical moderation goes on. November. Boy, I'm going to have to move. There are some figures, so slightly fewer students doing the end of year exam than mid-year, which we always have, mean about the same, 62%, 63%. The number of students got 100%, I don't know. I couldn't get hold of that information. Normally it comes out on a sheet, but it wasn't there this year's. I like to know those things, so I'll see if I can find it out. Detailed studies, once again, 16% of students did synchrotron, 6% for photonics, and 78% did sound. They're the grades, but you've got them on the all the marks to get different grades, you've got them on that sheet I handed out anyway, so we can skip that. Here, what happened with this one? Alright, magnetic flux threading the loop. Well, the magnetic field caused by the current in the loop's going around this sort of way. I'm not going to redraw it, but oh, and I didn't even get one of the lines to cross, you beauty. I need them to continue through. I should at least draw. The magnetic field lines are parallel to the loop, so there isn't any magnetic flux through the loop. The big thing was lots of students were multiplying the area by the strength of the magnetic field, which I think they were given somewhere or got in. Oh no, there we are, it's written there for you. They multiplied the area of the loop by the strength of the magnetic field to get a flux, but there was no flux, it's parallel. We could have done that if they didn't use this figure, but none of them did. The error was always, they're always using this figure, the magnetic flux caused by the coils. Yes, that was a bit of a concern, but it didn't seem to be, as far as we could see. We did discuss that, but no one seemed to find any problem with that when they were marking papers. What do I have to do? Loop, PQ, R, all this sort of stuff around here. The magnetic field, okay, through the loop. And it says, sketch the voltage. Sketch the voltage. Well, the voltage is how rapidly the flux is changing. So you just have to draw a graph. I've just got to try and remember what the... So draw a graph. Which had the steeper slope? First one. So you had to draw a graph. how far across did it go? No, it went to zero there, didn't it? Whoops. Sorry. No, it shouldn't. Right, so, and then one here. So something like that, or exactly the reverse. Whoops, go across here, then go up there. So either is acceptable because there was no positive direction specified in the question, so either way is fine. The physical law to do what? We need to do, Faraday's law. And then as the field is being reduced to get the direction through there. Oh yes, now some students are able to get the direction P to Q or Q to P, I can't remember which way it was now, but explaining it is often another matter altogether. And someone would just copy down off their cheat sheet Lenz's law, and that might get one of the marks, but it's not enough to completely explain the question. And it's a question very much like that's been on the last few years' paper, and it's always the same problem. Can they explain what they're actually doing with Lenz's law? What went on here? Question 12 wasn't too bad. Just work out the power. They've told you somewhere above. What have they told you? Oh, yeah, they've given you the voltage, the resistance. Sorry, I'm tangled here. Got voltage and resistance, so you can use P equals V squared and R or something like that to get the power of one of them. And then they say, I forget, what did that work out at? 1200, I think, didn't it? I think it comes out to 1200. Now, complete the circuit to show the connection when the heater is set to provide a heating power of 600 watts. Now, less power if you connect them in parallel. Well, basically, they just have to work out whether they have to be in series or parallel, and then draw it. So basically, just a line down here somewhere would have done to put them in series. But many draw it in parallel. Many, don't know why it does that. So we had parallel circuits drawn, you know, joining up here and there, that sort of thing. We had other ones with, why? Some drew this, and then they'd put another thing in here, another resistor in here as well, and which we couldn't, not series, or not parallel, but we couldn't work out what that was there for either. They seemed to think there was some other thing as well as the two 48 ohm ones. That was very common. Power lines, and once again, this is sort of series parallel circuits. This one's a series circuit, I guess. And a couple of the questions here, I'm acutely aware of the fact that I need to finish now. A couple of these questions involved the resistance in the power lines, and I think it's quite clear in the question that there's 2 ohms on one line down to there, and there's another 2 ohms on the line back, making 4 ohms of resistance in the lines. Many students just use 2 ohms as the resistance. Then they had trouble working out whether what was in series and what current was going through what, and working out the current. One of the questions, I can't remember which one of them, had about 2 or 3 steps to it, and we do consciously try to award marks for that. So just because the student gets step 1 incorrect, doesn't get the current right, we don't say, oh, that's it. We then say, all right, if they did use that current, have they done the right thing in the next step to work out the power loss? So they can get the mark for that part of it, even if they've mucked up the first part. So questions worth 3 or 4 marks. We're not just scrubbing them when they start making their first mistakes. We try to allot marks to each section of the question. So they caused a little bit of bother. This was... that's just another same sort of deal. Was the power loss in the transmission lines? What do they do there? I think you had to work backwards. You had to work it for this one. There were a few steps to it. You had to work out how much current this needed to operate, and therefore how much voltage, and therefore how much voltage you got here, and the rest of the voltage was lost in the line. So there are about 3 steps to the question, and as soon as you put multiple steps in, they find the difficulties. Ooh. Can I go a couple of minutes?
Yeah, you don't. You
go I'll go 5. Yep. Oh, is that all? Bad luck. Oh no, my tea. A couple of questions on the light and matter were really good and caused a bit of difficulty. The first one was okay. It's the second one. They gave photoelectric effect. They gave a number of observations. Number of electrons emitted depends on the intensity. The energy of the emitted electrons depends on the frequency. The energy of the emitted electrons depends on the metal surface. Now, and then, so this question students needed to read carefully. Not once, not twice, 3 times probably. If I needed to read it 3 times, 4 times, 5 times, I think they should too. And this is a common sort of thing. I think students tend to rush through. They say, oh yeah, I know this question, I've seen this before, and away we go. They need to read these, particular ones that are a bit different, read them carefully a few times to see what's being asked. Anyway, the particle model can account for all of these observations. The wave model can explain 2 of the observations, but not the 3rd. Select the observation that the wave model cannot explain, and explain how the particle model does explain it. So there's 2 parts to the question. Which one of those does the wave model not explain? Where are we? I've got to read them again now. Frequency, B, hang on, energy of the emitted electrons, depends on the middle search. No, the number of B. The wave model can explain the other two. Doesn't explain that one. So B we're looking for, and then just a little explanation. That's the one the wave doesn't explain, and then we want explain how the particle model does explain it. The second part of the question is not tell me how the wave model doesn't explain it. The question is tell me how the particle model does explain it. So they need to answer the question asked. Just keep going quickly. This was similar to the previous year, I think. We're looking at a couple of... Are the black lines the darks or the lights? That's bright. X is bright. Y is dark. It's marked over here. Yep, that's okay. The path difference from here and there is 1160 nanometers. What is the path difference to the another colour to Y? We know the central one, there's no path difference. The first bright one out the side is one wavelength difference, two wavelengths difference, three wavelengths difference, or if you want the formula, you have that in lambda thing. So we know that if you looked at the pattern here, central maximum, no wavelength, one, two. So the path difference to that one's two wavelengths. The path difference to this one will be half, one and a half, two and a half. That'll be 2.5 wavelengths difference. What are we supposed to write down? S2y and S1y. Have we got the wavelength on the previous page, have we? The wavelength's on the previous page. So going from there to there, this one here, the path difference is 0, 1, 2. Two wavelengths difference to that one, 2.5 wavelengths difference to the next one. So whatever the wavelength was from the previous page, this one's going to be half of that, further than... Oh, no, it's not than that one, wasn't it? Oh, you've got to use this one. It wasn't on the previous page? Oh. You have to do your 2.5 wavelengths is... Sorry, your two wavelengths. Two wavelengths is 1160. You got the wavelength, then just 2.5 times that. This one. Right, we're firing electrons? Firing electrons through a fine grating, and we're getting those classic diffraction pattern. And then we're asked, the students now increase the accelerating voltage and hence the speed of the electrons. Okay, so the electrons have increased their speed, and we want to know how far apart should the rings be separated now? Well, the separation of the rings depends on the wavelength. The wavelength of an electron is h over p, so it depends on its momentum. Now what we've done is speed them up, that means more momentum, smaller wavelength, less spread. I'm just trying to remember what is it. Did they have to give any explanation, or was it just a? Oh, righto. The explanations. A common one was they're moving faster, so they don't have a chance to spread out as much. That was a very, very common one. Yes, some mixed up some of them tried energies, yes. And in another question they muck up with energies all instead too, I think. Just trying to think what the other things are. I think they're the main ones. This one here, we've got some, what's VO5A? Electrons in this one. Replace electron, go with X-rays. So electrons, X-rays. And we see that the patterns are pretty similar. The spread of lines is pretty similar, which means the wavelength should be about the same. Explain why the electrons and the X-rays produce a very similar pattern. The wavelength's about the same, or the same. That's what we're looking for. Maybe that wasn't too bad. Estimate the energy of the photon of these X-rays. Ah, yeah. The energy of the photon. Well, a couple of... this was over the page. Some just said 600 eV. Same as the electrons. No, they're mixing up. The wavelength depends on the momentum. It doesn't depend on the energy. Do they have to explain this one as well? Show you working. Oh, yeah, righto. A lot of them, yeah, dealt with energy. They just said it was 600 electron volts. They had a mix-up of, you know, there's some formulas apply to matter, some apply to electromagnetic radiation, some apply to both, like that one. And it's very common for them to mix up which one they're using. They mix up electromagnetic equations, they use them for matter. So they have electrons moving at the speed of light and things like this. So a mix-up of, knowing which ones apply to which situation is the big problem. And the last one you would have thought was pretty straightforward. The energy of the photon... Oh, draw an arrow between the energy states. Yeah, you had to work out what energy that photon was equivalent to and then find out where that jump was. Was it that one, I think? Can't remember without working it out. And you would have thought that was pretty straightforward. We had some drawing arrows up instead of down. We had some drawing lines without any arrow on them. I think they got one mark out of two. And then we had all sorts of cascades. We had every line in creation drawn on some of them, and going up or down didn't seem to make any difference. You wouldn't think it was such a difficult question.
Sorry?
No, they got zero. No, I think that they got zero. A decision had to be made. The ones drawing a line from one to the other without an arrow, do we give them nothing? Because certainly drawing it up was no good. And we decided to give them one mark from memory. The detailed studies, just quickly... For synchrotron, the mean mark was 70%, photonic 61%, sound 76%, and they're the questions that students found difficult on each of those sections of the exam. And as I said, the same thing as what I said for the first half of the year, which of the detailed studies is the easiest seems to vary from year to year. Sorry, not the easiest. Which one the students seem to do better on varies from year to year.